Hey y'all, it's me, Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. Welcome back to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm a board-certified gynecologist and sexual medicine and menopause expert in Chicago. Okay, so today I just finished interviewing a patient of mine who I've been treating for many years, who is both menopausal and has lichen sclerosis. And she wanted to tell her story, especially her story of dismissal, which we've talked about before. I did a great episode on lichen sclerosis with my friend and expert in this field as well, Dr. Jill Kraft. So please refer to that. I just will review with you a little bit what lichen sclerosis is about. As we know, as we've talked about in the past, it is a chronic inflammatory condition of the skin of the vulva. It is autoimmune related. It's an inflammatory disorder. Lichen sclerosis et atrophicus is how it's always been or historically been described in Latin. And so if you think about putting those words together, lichen is from the Greek Latin word of tree moss or rough plant-like growth. And sclerosis means a hardening or thickening or scarring. And et atrophicus means atrophy, right? So it's both scarring and thick, but also thin and atrophic. And that's what makes lichen sclerosis so special. And it is historically been considered, you know, not that common, but it is much more common than we see it, about at least one in 70, probably more than that. She talks about it in the podcast as well, but it's where you can get some whitening or pale discoloration, these white porcelain-like plaques. It's thinning of the skin. It's fissuring, these microtears. People come in with post-coital or post-sex bleeding because of the perineal fissuring. That's oftentimes how I'll first get the diagnosis, because I'll see this fissuring. And that's why my mind goes to that in these like 20 and 30-year-old girls. There's some smooth shininess to it. There's some architectural changes. There's a lot of fusing that can happen. The scarring can lead to labial fusion. We talk about labial regression and the disappearing labia. The labia minora fuse to the majora. You get clerophimosis. This is where we do a lot of clerophimosis, lysis of adhesions. That clitoral hood gets stuck to the clitoral glands. And in postmenopause or different hormonal states, you know, the clitoris shrinks down. It gets worse without the hormones. And we used to think it was a bimodal distribution, pre-pubertal and postmenopausal. But what we know is because those women oftentimes will have intense itching and burning, or those girls will have it. And you can have it both at these two times of estrogen-deprived states. And so I think symptomatically you might see it more in those ages, but I see it across all reproductive ages. And so you can have that intense itching, burning, pain with intercourse, you know, tearing. You can have just plain old vulvar vaginal burning. You can have pain with urination and progressive scarring. A lot of patients get misdiagnosed because they get treated on the phone or through televisits, right? They're having recurrent itching. They're treating themselves for yeast infections. They're getting called in Diflucan left and right. And so I see a lot of patients with some of these vulvar dermatoses because of that. It's not just itchy skin, really, though. It's also that burying of the clitoral. It's the narrowing of the vagina. It's the fusion of the labia. So when it gets to be that severe, you really need to get on the treatment and get it under control. I love my friend Jill, who Kraft, like I said again, she uses this great house analogy when she talks about lichen sclerosis and why it happens. It's like, you know, the basement membrane, there's a protein there. Your body thinks it's a foreign agent, and it starts, you develop an inflammatory reaction to it. And so some of the symptoms, and so then you get this inflammatory reaction from the thickening of the skin, and then from eventually there's going to be scarring and thinning that happens. Classically, treatment, you know, we always say lichen sclerosis should usually be biopsied. A lot of times we look at it visually and we know it's lichen sclerosis for those of us who do a lot of vulvar dermatology. But really high potency topical steroids are the gold standard, because it not only will prevent prevent further disease progression, but it actually will prevent vulvar cancer. Average patient walking around the vulva has a 1% risk of vulvar cancer. That risk goes to 3 to 5% or more, depending on the study, for people that have untreated lichen sclerosis. So oftentimes we do biopsies because we want to make sure we're not getting some precancerous changes. But when used properly, and Jessica does a good job describing how she uses clobetasol, which is, you know, the ointment that we usually choose to use, it will heal the skin and reverse the inflammation and prevent scarring. There's also other treatment options. There's like tacrolimus. There is, some people have wanted to use Monalisa or CO2 lasers or PRP. There's other things that are in the pipeline, but nothing has been proven to decrease your risk of vulvar cancer like high potency steroids. I think that's very important. This is a chronic condition. It will never go away. It is autoimmune mediated. You have to use chronic steroids on that skin, but you might decrease the frequency over time as it gets into remission. And there's going to be times where it flares up again. You know, it might be hormonally related. It might be other times in your life. And so then you have to use it again every day, but you have to get to a point where it's kind of, it's in remission, and then you can go to twice weekly or weekly really until the end of time, because you don't want to get vulvar cancer. So just remember, it's a chronic autoimmune related inflammatory skin condition, under-recognized, often misdiagnosed, but if managed correctly, if caught early, we can make difference in women's lives. And today you're going to hear from one of those women that was able to really get on top of her own vulvovaginal health. And I've been working with her for probably 6 or 7 years now, maybe more. And she's, you know, doing great, and she wanted to tell her story. So let's get at it. Let's listen to Jess's story of lichen sclerosis. Hey, y'all, it's me, Dr. Samina Ramon, Gyno Girl. Welcome back to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm Dr. Samina Ramon, board-certified gynecologist, sexual medicine, and menopause expert in downtown Chicago. I'm super excited to have one of my very own patients here today to talk about her journey with lichen sclerosis, as you heard in the intro. So we're calling her Jess, and Jess is here. Jess, thank you so much for being on the show.
You're welcome. My pleasure. I think it's we've been talking about doing this for a long time.
So many people find it very compelling because there are people that don't realize how much patients go through, you know, to get, you know, either complicated diagnoses or get the appropriate menopausal treatment or their genital pelvic health concerns. And so it's really nice sometimes to hear the journey and you know, a lived experience on what you went through, so that, you know, I have a lot of clinicians that listen to this actually, and hopefully we're going to be offering like CME for it soon. So I feel like, you know, some people don't get the fact, or maybe they've done it to other patients and don't even realize that, you know, they've dismissed someone or said something that has really devastated someone's, you know, or has had a dramatic impact on their life. So I appreciate you being on to tell your story.
Thank you.
And you're a very sort of like, you're a very educated, like, well, you know, informed patient who knows exactly kind of like the things that she needs to do and not needs to do. And you kind of struggled with lichen sclerosis, would you say?
I did. I didn't know I had it. I went to a place that purported to understand women's issues, like in menopause. And when I went there, they told me I had it, but they didn't explain how I was supposed to treat it properly. Mm-hmm. They gave me a very simplistic, what they thought was a way to get rid of it. And it didn't work. And I kept trying to get help. And they just said, this is the only way to help you. And what they were offering was a steroid called clobetasol, which does work. But at that point, my lichen sclerosis was so advanced that my skin was fusing, which would have meant, had I not seen you, that I would never be able to have sex again, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's devastating.
And it was pretty traumatizing. And I just want to say that one of the things that made it even more traumatizing is that the people that I thought I could trust basically said that it was all in my head, that I was being that, and they related it to, they used the fact that, you know, I have depression and things like that to make it like it was a woman's hysteria type problem.
And this is a major symptom.
And this is a very well known a clinic, I won't name them, in a big hospital.
In a big hospital. That's
in Chicago.
In Chicago. That's all we'll say. No, but it's, you know, that's very upsetting to hear. I feel like, you know, that's very common that I hear this, unfortunately, because, you know, I'm usually, sometimes if patients really are on top of their symptoms, I might be the first person they see. But a lot of times I'm like six or seven in their lineup before, you know, and so I've heard a lot of really alarming things, you know, and I understand, you know, from the physician's perspective, you know, that a lot of people don't learn this stuff in medical school or residency because it is an area of GYN and gynecology, dermatology, whatever field that you're in that isn't very focused on. But the fact of the matter is, like, you know, and I see a lot of like in my office and wondered how they get missed, because once you see it, you can't unsee it, right? So once I see a vulva, I'm not going to be able to unsee what's happened to someone's vulva. And so I think it goes to the fact that as gynecologists, you know, we're expected to just like put a speculum in and that's it. But you actually were at a center that was specialized in this arena. So that was, that's even more surprising, because this is, again, you're right, like potentially like some of the experts in the field. Ask you, I wanted to get an idea, like the people hear about, like, what brought you to the point where you actually sought out a specialist?
I knew that I was having changes because I've been in menopause for a minute.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the lichen, but I knew about the fact that sex was painful, that which was complicated by the fact that I used to have vaginismus, which is another condition. But that's, and then, so I went to this special clinic.
So just for a second, like, before, like, when in your 20s and 30s, you think that you were having difficulty with penetrative sex?
Yes, I know I was. But that was considered, that was diagnosed with as vaginismus.
Vaginismus. Which used to be our blanket term for anybody that had painful sex. Historically, it's like a term from the, you know, from Marion Sims days, if you know who that is.
I don't,
father of, like, 1800s, whatever. It was like, you know, the terminology that just didn't go away, but it is, you know, this genital pelvic pain issue that people experience, involuntary contraction of the pelvic floor, for those of you listening. And so that used to be our bucket. Like, that's what we called anyone that was having painful sex.
Yeah. And so they prescribed PT. I had some very strange physical therapists who were very focused on the pelvic floor, which is fine if that was the issue, but it wasn't. And I used dilators, and I did the Mona Lisa, which is a laser thing. And I was like, wait. So, and I think at some point I found you.
Did you have the classic itching that, you know, you hear about for women? Sometimes they have these, because you just had sort of painful sex and skin changes that you noticed.
It was the skin. I mean, I'm unfortunately, I'm guilty of this. I'm not looking down there all the time.
No, but who is?
You know, it's like, I don't know what's going on down there. I didn't know a vulva from spaghetti. I didn't know what I was looking at.
Yeah.
So when when they sort of accused me of just being hysterical or whatever you want to call it, like, you need a therapist. That's basically exactly what they said to me. So I had to, like, I was devastated, and I did make a complaint, which was a waste of time, but they, so that made me feel very hopeless. You know, who do I see? So I don't remember how I found you, but I was looking for people who seemed to focus on a different stage in life than having babies, you know, because, you know, things are changing. And this was sort of at the cusp of when more information was coming out about menopause. And then when you took a look at it, it was very advanced. The fusing of my skin, it was really bad.
You had fusing in the posterior, the lower part of the vulva, as well as the anterior, the top part.
Right.
And so your opening was becoming even smaller. Obviously, your labia minora had kind of fused in, the clitoris, all the things that we see with lichen sclerosis from the scarring of lichen sclerosis. And so it was obvious to me that you were uncomfortable, because it looked like it'd be very hard to even get a dilator through.
Right. So I did, and I used dilators, the silicone ones, but it was difficult at that point to do much of anything. And I can't tell you how grateful I am to you, because I felt like no one was listening to me. I went to different doctors, and it was almost as if they were pretending like menopause isn't a real thing, and all it is hot flashes, take some hormones, take an antidepressant, whatever. And it's, and I think that that's the way women have been treated for a long time. Historically. Yeah. So, I guess it was very hard for me. I mean, you saw me cry a lot.
It was a difficult road, I think. And I think that, a turning point for you and our treatment was really being able to do those lysis of adhesions and I think we did some injectable steroids as well, because it would have gotten very aggressive. So, we wanted to reduce the inflammation before doing the lysis of adhesion. So that's why we did some local injected steroid into the areas as well.
Right. And you're talking about when we cut the adhesion.
Yeah. When we actually did the incision. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that, and just as a side note for people that are listening, that like you really do have to get the inflammatory stage kind of taken care of before doing the cutting, because then most patients will just refuse. So in the fusion process, if we hadn't made sure that the inflammation was decreasing, then your situation would have been a different outcome, and we would have just gone for cutting right away, which is why we did all the injections and also like just understanding how to apply clobetasol. Right, people just usually hand you a tube and say go for it.
Yeah. Okay. So I have to thank YouTube, because I was following different people. Like, what do I do? So with clobetasol, if you just put it on when your skin is dry and it isn't moist, you're supposed to soak your skin in warm water, so it's more receptive. And I didn't know that. So I'm using it on dry skin. It doesn't really do a whole lot, especially at that point I had these adhesions, so it wasn't doing anything, right?
Right.
So, so I had my own little technique for that, and it worked a lot better after I did follow that. But that was I'm laughing because like you have to find the information where it is. It wasn't so common now,
right.
And everybody was talking about hot flashes. I was like, I don't know why that's like the only thing people are talking about, but
it's hard. And I think that again, a lot of people don't even emphasize, we know lichen sclerosis, the symptoms get worse when you're estrogen deprived. So you really do need that topical estrogen or topical DHEA that goes along with it, that local therapy. And that's sometimes when patients will start getting worsening itching. Like they used to think that it was lichen sclerosis was a bimodal distribution, meaning that only prepubertal people, girls, got it, and postmenopausal, because without the estrogen, people had more itching and more significant symptoms. And that was, I guess, because people weren't looking for it, right? Like now, for those of us who specialize in this, we look for the vulva and changes all the time. And so we pick it up in 20 or 30-year-olds at the very early stages before it becomes sort of more advanced when it's more difficult.
Yeah. And I mean, when I say what you did changed my life, I'm not talking about, like, I could use much larger dilators and vibrators as well. Because the other thing that I've learned from going to conferences and listening to you is that you have to use it or you lose it, whether you're single or not. You got to, because your body in menopause needs that blood flow.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's where...
I know I'm going a little off topic, but I'm just saying.
No, for sure. And I think that's really important that, and that's why vibration and vibrator therapy that we try to, instill is so important for so many patients, because, again, you're getting that blood flow to the area and things are getting more improvement. And that's the whole point of the hormones, too, is to get the vaginal microbiome back in check and also change the skin to younger years, I guess. Did anyone ever talk to you about like the cancer risk associated with lichen sclerosis? Was that something that was ever discussed?
I don't remember.
I mean, you don't remember.
I don't remember that part, but I guess.
Were there any types of explanations that you were kind of given about, like, what people told you about what lichen sclerosis is and what it would look like for you at all? I mean, did you get any level of education like that other than, like, after?
No, not at first. I mean, I understood it was very serious when I talked to you, but up until then, it just seemed like it was treated as something minor.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was scolded. They're like, you need to use the clobetasol more. And I'm like, I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
It felt very negative, right. But I didn't get the education I needed.
Yeah, no. Of course. Right.
And there was, you know, if they were alarmed about it, they just didn't, have a solution.
Right.
So,
they didn't have a solution, I think that that is one of the pitfalls too, is, you know, going to sometimes big centers where they have to see 30, 40 patients a day. You're not going to get the time that you need to actually educate patients and talk to them about it and really make sure that they have an understanding. Because sometimes hearing a diagnosis like, okay, this is lichen sclerosis, we don't have a cure for it. This is going to be a chronic condition that you take with you to your grave, you know, for the most part, like it gets very, you know, distressing to hear. And then you add that, like, mm-hmm. okay, if you don't treat it, you'll increase your vulvar cancer risk. And so, And I think it's very important to understand that, because I don't think a lot of patients even get to say, oh, it's just a skin condition. This is an autoimmune regulated skin condition that is really about, you know, these changes that can lead to vulvar cancer if left untreated. So if the average woman has a 1% risk of vulvar cancer, someone with lichen sclerosis goes up to 3-5% untreated. And so clobetasol is the only thing. I mean, there are a lot of different, you know, treatments that are, you know, patients come to me like, well, can you do the PRP? Can you do this? Can you do Mona Lisa? But the only thing proven to reduce your risk of vulvar cancer is using those steroids to the vulva.
Right. The one thing that I was curious about, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Does, when you talk, people talk a lot about inflammation these days. Does diet play a role in lichen? Like in terms of eating certain types of foods that might make you have more of an inflammatory response?
Absolutely. I think that there is, we probably don't have, like, you know, direct correlation or causation kind of thing. But what I think I've seen also with my patients is I have patients who have other autoimmune or inflammatory conditions along with lichen. And so a lot of times they'll tell me like, okay, I've really been working on, you know, regulating my diet. Sometimes we see patients that, you know, go on medications that are anti-inflammatory, like, you know, the big push for GLP-1s these days. And so mm-hmm. you can see that, you know, when they reduce their overall levels of inflammation, that they do have some alleviation of symptoms related to their sexual function. So if they have like that vulvar pain, vestibulodynia from, we think, inflammatory reasons, then they can sometimes actually see some improvement. I don't think it's a way to treat it, though. You know, like, I think they might see like some mild improvements, but I don't think it's going to be an alternative to treatment topically or surgically, especially when you're pretty far gone. Now, if I don't know if we found someone really early, like sometimes I'll see people that just have a little bit of fissuring at the opening or it's cut at the opening. So every time they have sex, they bleed. And those are the patients that sometimes I'll catch early before any significant changes. And so the question is, okay, so if you try to do some anti-inflammatory things early on, would it change the progression? But I think still the only thing that we know that will change the progression is getting that anti-inflammatory steroid to the area, because it really does need sort of local therapy. But I don't think it hurts, right? I don't think it hurts to reduce your stress and, you know, improve your, you know, even from a cardiovascular perspective, of course, right? Reduction mm-hmm. of stress, exercise, all the things that can reduce inflammation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How do you think, like, being dismissed, you know, or being told things were in your head or, you know, whatever the case may be, did it really, like, impede your desire to get help? Because that's something that some of the studies have shown, right? That some people gave up, like, wanting to get help.
I was furious. I was so angry mm-hmm. because I felt, I mean, and it wasn't just one person who told me I needed a therapist. It was two. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, that's disgusting, first mm-hmm. of all, because, and these were women who said this to me. And mm-hmm. I was like, what? So it made me really angry. I think I made a formal complaint, but more than that, I thought I got to do something about this. And so I guess I'm that whatever small percentage. I just went on a search, right? And that's why I say, I'm really grateful to have found you, because most gynecologists are OBGYNs, at least from what I could see. It was hard to find someone who knew anything about menopause. Mm-hmm. I mean, now there's lists of people, right?
Yeah, now it's
this was before it blew up.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think I've been seeing you for probably 5-6 years by now, right?
A while. Yeah.
It was definitely before the pandemic. So, it's been a while. And I think that, you've made great progress. And I feel there's always room that we can continue to work on. And what I love is that you're always asking questions. I like that. A lot of docs they don't like being asked so many questions, but I like it. I like to, because then it pushes me to want to go learn more too. I'm like, well, maybe I'll have to look that up, Mm-hmm. So I really do like that you are very, thoughtful about, your own health. And really, I think that, you've made such a difference in yourself, but also even talking to others about things. I feel like that's been very helpful.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
What would have, for you, obviously not being dismissed would have been helpful, but yeah. Was there anything else you wish you would have known ahead of time? Is there something if you could tell your younger self something now, your 20-year-old self, and about any of the lichen or genital pelvic health or, even menopause, perimenopause?
Well, I think I would say just you have to advocate for yourself. Don't be afraid. You just have to keep trying. I'm also lucky. I have good insurance, mm-hmm. and I have money. I've paid out of pocket for some of these treatments, mm-hmm. and I'm certainly blessed that I can do that. Not everybody can do that, and I have to say that not to be on a soapbox, but a lot of people don't have good insurance. And they get terrible treatment, and they're treated a whole lot worse than me. And I think that as a younger person, I'm 55, so all I ever heard about menopause was, oh, you get hot flashes. And then my mom told me, oh, nothing happened to me, so you'll be fine.
I didn't go through menopause.
But I'm like, you don't, she has a dog, whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But nobody ever said anything that was of any use.
Yeah.
But as far as what I would have said to myself, don't freak out. We'll find some, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was, I've been through the journey since, I told you, I was diagnosed with vaginismus. And that was, nobody knew what the heck that was.
Yeah.
Like you said, it was a bucket. Oh, you're having trouble, but,
And I think, even in the last, I would say in the last 14, 15 years, we've come a long ways, even since I've graduated from residency and understanding, the vulvar vestibule and some of these skin conditions, these inflammatory skin conditions, mm-hmm. and even how hormones affect our genital urinary system, right? The genital urinary syndrome menopause was coined in 2014. Before then, women were just told their vaginas were atrophying. They were just told, your vaginas are becoming useless. This is vulvar vaginal atrophy, And so that was a big historic moment to be able to say this is a syndrome related to hormonal, changes and deficiencies. And, we now know that is across the board. It's, when people take birth control pills, it's when people are lactating, it's when people have cancer treatments, a lot of other things. And so I think, we've made some strides in that department, but sexual medicine's been sort of on the back burner for so many people, even within women's health. So,
but I think a lot of it, what I take away from it, I don't know what I would have said to my younger self, but just don't, because it was so different back then.
Sure.
I mean, when I was in college, it was it was really different. Mm-hmm. So that was the 90s. So.
Yeah.
But I do feel like there's still a lot of existing myths about women just being done at a certain age and you're invisible.
Yeah.
and just stop bothering me. You don't matter anymore.
Right.
You don't have, you're not a sexual being anymore. You're not at this.
Yeah. No, it's true.
You know, you're just, and I think that that is very painful for a lot of women because you want to feel like you're more than just
your vagina.
I don't know. Your vagina. Yeah. Well, there's that, but also just that you're still a person, you know?
Right. No, of course.
A valuable person. Yeah. So I think, you know, that's hopefully those ideas are changing a lot. Right.
And I think that's what we're seeing with this menopause revolution that we always talk about is really that people are now sort of redefining themselves at midlife. And they're actually like exploring new jobs, exploring new opportunities, exploring new relationships, mm-hmm. all the things. So I think that that's pretty exciting to see.
Yeah.
Do you, and tell, if you want to talk a little bit about how menopause has affected you, because obviously, you know, in the last, you know, 6 or 7, you entered menopause at age?
In my mid-40s.
Mid-40s, right. Yeah. So earlier, which is not abnormal for, you know, people that have potentially autoimmune conditions, which we know, like in sclerosis is, you know, in right. that category. And so I think that that is earlier than, you know, average, but do you want to talk a little bit about that transition? Because that was before I met you.
Right.
In terms of like, you know, did you have some of the mood disruption? Did you have some of the vasomotor symptoms, musculoskeletal symptoms? Because we know genital pelvically, like your genitals have been affected by right. the lack of estrogen.
I didn't notice anything right away. I was thrilled to not be getting a period. I will tell you that I was like, I don't miss that at all.
Right. Right. Yeah.
That was not like something that I enjoyed. So, but I didn't notice right away until my libido dropped to basically zero. And I remember the day my gynecologist said, it's never going to go back to what it was. It may not come back. And I'm like sobbing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because it's a very weird thing.
Yeah.
I'm in a better place with that now. Yeah.
Right. You feel like a part of you's gone then, right?
Well, it's a big part. Yeah. I mean, it's a weird thing. So that was probably the biggest loss at first. I mean, then of course, over time in my 50s, I've noticed more of the weight gain and the weight distribution. And these are the things that I started to notice. And I joked around with my students in my class. Like I was like, I look like a potato. And they're like laughing hysterically. I'm like, I'm not joking. Like right now I feel like a potato. I used to weigh so little and I'm like, what happened? So it's just kind of, that's probably also a big down. That also bothers me. But, you know, there's only so much you can do, right?
Right. Right. And, don't do the best.
I'm trying to change my diet and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And but I think that when you start to see things, you're like, what just happened? Like in 2 months, I became a potato, you know?
It definitely hits you really hard at one point. You're just like,
I think we're visual people, women, and we do judge ourselves very harshly.
Harsh, yeah.
But I will say that one good thing out of COVID was really nice elastic waist pants.
I know. Right?
So you can look cute with a little extra, you know,
exactly.
So
I mean, people were drinking, people were baking, there was a lot happening during COVID.
But I think also
nobody was touching each other, that's for sure.
But I think what I also feel like I'm realizing, you have to be nicer to yourself,
yes,
more accepting
Absolutely.
Of where you're at, and if things change, they change, and otherwise, you know, just deal with it. It's just like because the other piece of this that I think is coming out is that women are realizing that they have value regardless of how they're shaped or if they look a certain way. And I, you know, that they're valuable with or without a man telling them they're valuable. Right. And I'm not saying, like, I'm not anti-dudes. I'm just saying, like, having that value regardless of what happens to your body. You know,
regardless,
and absolutely. I think that's just, you kind of have to get to a point, like, well, I was mentioning the We Do Not Care Club, so shout out,
we were talking about beforehand, That's why it resonated.
I want to get to that point where I don't care. I don't care about the potato tummy. And I'm getting there.
Yeah. Before we got on our conversation, Jess and I were talking about, is it Melanie?
Melanie Peters, I think is her name.
She has gone viral on Instagram. If you haven't seen her, I'm sure you have, because now it's, 2 million followers?
Yeah.
Yeah. And she was in the New York Times.
She has the We Do Not Care one.
Yeah.
She was in the New York Times too? Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's putting the world on notice that we don't care anymore. And I think that just resonated so much with so many people that it was like, oh, wow, yeah, nobody cares about this. But I think it was that was what it is. She just came on board and was like, I'm suffering in perimenopause, but I don't care about, if I'm wearing this bra today. I don't care how my hair looks today. I don't care about this extra weight,
Yeah, that, and also just if you want to cook dinner, cook
it. If you don't,
I'm tired.
Exactly.
Who knows? Because I understand tired. I get tired too. And sometimes that's part of menopause as well. You just kind of sometimes don't have that
big motivation.
Absolutely.
And that's okay. Maybe tomorrow.
That's okay.
Absolutely.
And it's okay. So I think just in general, I'm just going to add this, just that I think, for myself, like I said, I've always been very judgmental of myself. But what I think makes it a little harder is that the women who are at the forefront of the marketing campaigns for all the supplements and the stuff on Instagram are gorgeous.
Yeah.
And skinny. And it's like, could you just have a couple of people who don't look like you?
Yeah.
It's annoying.
Yeah.
Halle Berry. I mean,
that's very true. She's great though. But I agree. But I think that's why that Dove campaign really hit. You remember that Dove campaign that was like all sorts of women?
Yeah, I remember.
That's why it hit off so well. So. Well, I really appreciate you, Jess, being on today and telling your story. I always ask everyone that comes through, because my husband jokes that the people that listen to my podcast are probably vigilantes. So I do. So we talk about what's your vigilante verdict. Like, what's your hot take that you want people to remember? Which you've said a couple times already, but I don't know if you want to repeat it before you go.
I say accept where you're at. Accept yourself where you're at that moment and try not to compare yourself to anybody.
Absolutely. Which becomes so hard with the social media world. That's all you feel like. Delete the apps. My daughter literally takes it away from me sometimes because I'm like, oh, and she's like, give it to me, mama. You've been on Instagram too long. And I'm it's nice that my teenager knows that it's not the safest thing for your mental health. But it's also been great because you learn so much and you meet people and it's, so it's good, the good with the bad.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's pros and cons,
All right. Well, thanks, Jess. I really appreciate you coming on and telling your story. And I appreciate you guys for listening to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm Dr. Samina Rahman. Remember, I'm here to educate so you can advocate for yourself. We'll see you next week.
If you have a second, please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. Review us, comment, tell me what else you want to hear to get more information. My practice website is www.cgcchicago.com. My website for Gyno Girl is www.gynogirltv.com. My Instagram is Gyno Girl, so please follow me for some good content. Additionally, I have a YouTube channel, Gyno Girl TV, where I love to talk about all these things on YouTube. And please subscribe to my newsletter, Gyno Girl News, which will be available on my website. I will see you next time.